are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Happy Monday, everybody. Hopefully you had a great weekend and are ready for a fantastic week. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes exactly like a candy bar. Go to builtbar.com. Use promo code Locked On. It'll get you $10 off your first order. That's promo code Locked On at builtbar.com. You'll get $10 off your first order. Today, we're continuing our network-wide series that we started last week, Franchise What Ifs. This is week two of the two-week series. Last week, we talked through some of the mid-90s What Ifs related to Ray Allen, Stephon Marbury, obviously throughout the Kevin Garnett era. We had Jerry's Good on the show last week, talked about a variety of topics, mostly non-Garnett era things, as that was the one window of time he did not cover the Timberwolves. And then we talked a little bit of Con era, a little bit of Tom Thibodeau era with him. And then at the end of the week last week, we jumped back into some Kevin Garnett era talk. Now we're going to get into the David Con era fully before later in the week getting into Tom Thibodeau. So we'll get into David Con, and there are plenty of things to talk about there. To be sure. First, a quick reminder to please subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. All right. So related to the David Con era, or I guess there's one really kind of Kevin McHale era that was a post-Garnett conversation that should be had. Well, actually two. So one would be the firing of Dwayne Casey, who of course was the successor to Flip Saunders as Timberwolves head coach. Kevin McHale fired Flip Saunders after the 25-26 start the year following the Western Conference Finals appearance. McHale coached the end of the year and actually went 19-12 over the final, 31 games or so. He hires Dwayne Casey in 05-06. And the Wolves only win 33 games, and you know you have to take a look at that roster to understand why they weren't quite the same team that had gone to the Western Conference Finals. This was after the Wolves had traded for Ricky Davis. You look at the top minutes getters on this team. You're looking at Kevin Garnett, half a season of Wally Szczerbiak, half a season of Ricky Davis, and then relying heavily on guys like Trent Hassel and Marcus Banks at 30-ish minutes a game. Marco Yarich is your starting point guard for most of the year. Michael Olowokandi only plays in 30 games, plus he's 30 years old. So there isn't exactly much for Kevin Garnett or Dwayne Casey to do with this team. There's not a whole lot to work with. Again, Wally had a good year, averaged 20 points a game, shot 41% from three, but he only played in 40 games. Ricky Davis was hurt a lot too. And so you're essentially getting half seasons from your number two and three options on offense, and neither of them are particularly good defenders. So that team won just 33 games. Dwayne Casey starts the next year 20-20 and gets fired. What if the Wolves don't fire Dwayne Casey? Does anything change related to Kevin Garnett? Probably not. Remember, after that season, they trade him. Randy Whitman becomes the interim head coach and then is hired full time and coaches for 2.5 years, or I guess one full season the next year, and then the first 19 games of the following year before he's fired. I don't know that keeping Dwayne Casey on helps that much because the roster was so bare. That offseason, the Wolves did the Garnett trade, got Al Jefferson and a bunch of pieces back from the Celtics. And I don't know that Dwayne Casey finds much additional success in Minnesota and is probably ultimately fired anyways, but we can all agree he's a better head coach than Randy Whitman and certainly better than Kurt Rambis, who David Kahn hired just a couple years later. So I don't know if anything changes in terms of the trajectory of Timberwolves history if they don't fire Dwayne Casey midseason in 2006, 2007. However, maybe it does. I mean, clearly he's a better coach. So maybe that year ends a little bit more positively and maybe the relationship with Garnett ends a little bit more positively. It's unclear. But that's one questionable move in Timberwolves history that I felt like we needed to mention. Segueing into the final move of the Kevin McHale era that I wanted to talk about, which is the Kevin Love trade on draft night in 2008, I believe it was, the Timberwolves drafted OJ Mayo third overall and then traded him for Kevin Love on draft night, who was drafted fifth overall. What if the Wolves don't complete that trade on draft night and don't trade away OJ Mayo? Remember, OJ Mayo as a rookie averaged 18.5 points a game. Second season in the league, 17.5 points a game, was seen as immediately as a number one option. Of course, he was playing as a 21-year-old for a Memphis Grizzlies team that went through three coaches that first year and won just 24 games. the Wolves ended up with Kevin Love. Kevin Love didn't play much early in his rookie season, really didn't play much late in his rookie season. His minutes per game were down a little bit, and his second year still wasn't even starting, but he was still on the all-rookie team. He was still an effective player, a good rebounder. He was efficient, still wasn't shooting three-pointers, but he wasn't playing. The Timberwolves weren't any better. Of course, Wolves Love's rookie year, Randy Whitman was the coach for the first 19 games, and the Wolves won just 24 games, the exact same number as Memphis. The following year, after Mikhail was fired by Glenn Taylor, Kurt Rambis takes over as coach, David Kahn's the chief executive, and the team wins only 15 games with Love in his second season. So what if that trade doesn't happen? I think certainly the Wolves continue to stay bad, as they did for a couple of years anyways, but then the following year, do the Wolves make the Randy Foy, Mike Miller trade to the Wizards to get an extra first round pick? I think they probably still would, because they're trading away essentially a guard and a wing. So then if they have the 5 and 6 picks again in 2009, do the Wolves still take Ricky Rubio and Johnny Flynn if the draft board falls the same way? Or would they look at a Jordan Hill, who ended up going 8th to the Knicks? Or would they look at, you know, trading back, or maybe not even acquiring that second pick? Or, you know, what does that look like? Would they still take Flynn and Rubio, or consider taking Curry if they had OJ Mayo in the fold and no Kevin Love? Obviously, then Al Jefferson isn't traded a year or so later. And so in that sense, they would still have OJ Mayo and Al Jefferson plus whatever they would have picked at 5 and 6. So I don't know, again, that changes the trajectory all that much, because the Wolves weren't, I mean, they never made the playoffs with Kevin Love. They should have his last year or two in Minnesota. So maybe, you know, down the road, the team stays bad longer and doesn't have that Rick Adelman coach, you know, era where they had a shot at making the playoffs and actually played competitive basketball for the most part. Maybe the team stays even worse, because even though Mayo had such a great start, he's out of the league now. He became a role player basically in year three, had a couple of additional higher volume scoring years, played for the Mavericks 1 year and started 82 games, averaged 15 points a game, but was a role player for the Bucks. That was 4 years ago now, was his last year in the league at age 28, and then he was out of the league. So Love obviously is still going strong and is overpaid as a max player, but does the trajectory of the franchise change? I would argue probably not a ton, but it's fascinating to think through that that possibility, to be sure. All right, next up, we're going to get really into the David Kahn era. We're going to spend our final couple segments talking about a couple of significant what-ifs there, and a couple that Jerry mentioned last week on the podcast that I wanted to go into a little bit deeper. Before we do that, though, wanted to talk about Built Bar. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. Most recently had the chocolate raspberry cream flavor. It was fantastic. I think still my favorite is the chocolate almond coconut. Also mint brownies, fantastic. Built Bars are protein bars that taste exactly like candy bars. There's 16 amazing flavors, chocolate nut flavors. There's 8 of those. There's 8 chocolate nut free flavors. The bars are covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft. They're easy to chew. They're perfect if you're health conscious. If you're trying to lose weight, if you're trying to maintain weight, while still indulging in a delicious treat, they're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and high fiber. The mint brownie that I already mentioned, the flavor profile on that one, 15 grams of protein, 110 calories, only 4 grams of sugar, 5 grams net carbs. Fantastic. A delicious treat if you're looking to you know, partially replace a meal or have a snack that's going to fill you up and still taste amazing. Go to builtbar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $10 off your first order. It's promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off your first order at builtbar.com. The David Kahn era started early in the offseason in 2009. He did not hire a head coach until after the draft, which was seen as a controversial move, and of course he didn't make the right decision when he hired Kurt Rambis either, but he'd only been on the job a couple of weeks when he had the 2009 draft. And his first move, essentially as general manager, president of basketball ops, was to trade Randy Foy and Mike Miller for the number 5 selection in the draft, which was insane. If you think about it, it has to be the cheapest price that any team has ever paid for a top 10 pick, or I guess top 5 pick in NBA history. I can't, or at least in the last 10 years, I don't know how the Wolves were able to pull that trade off. And at the moment, it looked like David Kahn might just be a genius. Obviously, that was proven to be false very quickly. But looking at that draft, Ricky Rubio was generally projected to go in the top 3. And so the fact that he was still there at 5 was fairly surprising. And I like to think about the possibility of what would have happened if Ricky Rubio had gone to, say, Memphis at two and say Hisham Thabeet is still on the board at five, or say he goes to Oklahoma City at three and either Harden or Tyreke Evans is on the board at five. How did the rest of the Timberwolves draft board look? Who would they have taken? Or would they have taken Steph Curry and let one of those guys that should have been in the top three or four slide further down the board? Would the Wolves have taken Flynn and Curry, or would they have taken some other combination of players? It really sounded like Johnny Flynn was legitimately, I mean, clearly he was higher on their board than Steph Curry was. And so I don't know that it changes what they do. I think they probably would have taken whoever slides from the top four if it's to beat Harden, Tyreke Evans, plus Johnny Flynn, and still left Steph Curry for Golden State. I think that's the most likely scenario. But what if that trade doesn't, but what if Rubio is taken earlier? Does that change? Not sure. That's one of the many what ifs related to that draft. The obvious one that we have to spend some more time on, and Jerry Zagoda brought this up as the first thing that came to mind related to Timberwolves what ifs in our conversation last week. That episode published last Thursday, if you want to go back and listen to it, is the most obvious one. What if the Wolves had drafted Steph Curry? How does the trajectory of the Wolves franchise look? What does that do to Golden State's franchise? Given that the Wolves took Rubio five, I would imagine they would have taken Rubio and Curry and left Flynn on the board. And who knows what Golden State would have done if they would have gone with Flynn or Jordan Hill or maybe DeMar DeRozan at that point. But if the Wolves had gotten Steph Curry and Ricky Rubio, does Rubio come over earlier than waiting 2 years? Maybe he comes over a year earlier. And at the time, everybody thought Steph Curry was just going to be an undersized shooting guard and didn't fully realize that he was going to be able to run the point guard effectively at the NBA level. And obviously, Golden State's done a number of different things with different guys initiating the offense there. But basically, he's a point guard, right? And what would the Wolves have done? Would they have played Curry and Rubio together like they wanted to do with Rubio and Flynn? I think that would have worked, certainly. Now, remember, Kurt Rambis is the coach for the first year and a half there, and he wanted to run the triangle. So that does not fit what Ricky Rubio, what his strong suit would be. Steph Curry would be fine in the triangle, but it would obviously be a waste of his talent. So how long does that last? Do the Wolves think that Curry's not good? Do they move on from him quickly after what probably would have been a so-so rookie season? We're going to get to some Johnny Flynn trade rumors here in a minute, but there were a lot of rumors related to Johnny Flynn after a strong rookie year that the Wolves were considering trading him. Would the Wolves have moved on from Curry quickly? Could he have been with an entirely different team? If not, does he stay with Minnesota? How fast do the Wolves move on from Kurt Rambis? And how does Steph Curry develop in the culture, the Minnesota Timberwolves franchise, versus the culture of the Golden State Warriors franchise, which took a minute to get to the point, obviously, where it is today? At the time, they had a little bit of a revolving door of head coaches. A number of things happened between this draft and them actually becoming the Warriors that everybody knows today. But there still was an advantage in terms of culture in Golden State than in Minnesota under David Kahn and Kurt Rambis. I tend to think that Curry would have been traded before he developed into anything special in Minnesota. I think he would have been undervalued, and it would have taken him a minute to truly become, an all-star. And in Golden State, he had those foot injuries, those ankle injuries early on. It took him until his fifth year in the league to even make an all-star team. Remember, his first couple seasons, he was really good, but then he basically lost most of his third season due to injury, was seen as a shooter only. And then it was like year four, year five, he blossomed into the Steph Curry that everybody knows now. The MVP, best shooter of all time, probably a top 15 player already all time. And does that happen in Minnesota? I don't think it would have. I think he would have been traded. Obviously, Golden State's trajectory changes. I have no idea what happens to them. I haven't spent enough time thinking about then what would have happened if they had Johnny Flynn. Would they have even been able to make some of the moves that they ultimately made, in later years to get Klay Thompson and Draymond Green? Would they have done those same things? Clearly, this team doesn't become a championship team without Steph Curry. Are they able to make other moves given their quote, light years ahead comments from, I think it was Bob Myers a few years ago. Who knows? What does that look like for Minnesota? I think they move on from Curry too early. I think it doesn't ultimately change what happens to Minnesota. They basically got nothing for Johnny Flynn after one decent season. I don't know that it changes Minnesota's trajectory much at all. Unless Curry is able to persevere through the horrendous coaching and some of the roster decisions that are made. Does that look differently for Minnesota? I'm not even sure that it does. And I'm not just saying that to make myself and Timberwolves fans everywhere feel better, but I really don't know that the Wolves would have been able to handle Steph Curry at that in that place and time. Remember, Kevin Love wasn't even a regular player until the second part of his second year on a bad team. And then suddenly he had a 30-30 game and Kurt Rambis couldn't ignore it any longer. And Kevin Love became the focal point of this team. He was suddenly allowed to shoot three-pointers and, you know, he became a perennial all-star. Would that have happened to Steph Curry? Would Love and Curry have been given the opportunity to team up in a non-triangle version of the offense? Who knows? And maybe I'm wrong and maybe it would have worked fantastically, but unfortunately we'll never find out what would have happened with that. The other kind of that era thing to talk about is the following offseason after Johnny Flynn's rookie year. There's a well-documented conversation that the Wolves had with the Indiana Pacers. The Pacers wanted Johnny Flynn and the Wolves could have gotten the number 10 pick. Remember, the Wolves had the number 4 pick in this draft. This is the Wes Johnson, DeMarcus Cousins draft. So I guess there's a what if in and of itself is whether, what if the Wolves had taken DeMarcus Cousins instead of Wes Johnson at 4? I don't really want to go too far into that one because I don't know. That would have been just a weird DeMarcus Cousins, Kevin Love. Does Love then get traded? Cousins ended up being, you know, an all-star, but never really, he hasn't really, you know, led a team to the playoffs and now he's had the injury concerns. And so who knows if that even changes anything related to the Wolves, but the Wolves had the number 4 pick that year. What if they had traded Johnny Flynn for Paul George? At the time, Jerry Zagoda reported this and it was briefly discussed on our podcast with Jerry last week. John Krasinski of The Athletic also, I think it was just last year, confirmed that that was something that was actually a trade that Indiana offered the Timberwolves. They offered the number 10 pick in that draft for Johnny Flynn straight up. And Johnny Flynn was coming off of a strong rookie season. He looked good. He looked healthy. The Timberwolves weren't good as a team, but there was a lot of things to like about Johnny Flynn. I mean, he was still a strong prospect. The fact that they took him over Curry is a whole nother thing. And the fact that his career flamed out due to the hip injury, but he was still a good prospect and the Pacers were interested in him for the number 10 pick. The Wolves, for the most part, the Wolves front office was interested in this deal, but when it was brought to Khan, he ultimately nixed it because he didn't want to give up on Flynn too early. And everybody knows how much he loved Johnny Flynn. And that's the way that this is portrayed in by John Krasinski and Jerry Zagoda today, is that that could have happened. And we know that the Wolves liked Paul George. So if that draft breaks the exact same way, but the Wolves have the 10 pick, that's exactly where the Pacers took Paul George. The Wolves absolutely would have taken him. So that's a pretty easy second part to this. The Wolves would have taken Paul George. And then the Wolves have Paul George. They have Ricky Rubio coming over that following season. They already have Kevin Love. That becomes a playoff team immediately. I mean, they nearly were a couple of years later with an aging Kevin Martin and, they added Kirilenko and they tried to add Brandon Roy, but it was kind of this revolving door of twos and threes that they were trying to add to this roster. What if they have Paul George? Paul George was good pretty much immediately. I mean, he was a 20-year-old his first season and only, you know, averaged 8 points a game. He was coming out of Fresno State, so there was supposed to be this learning curve. But year two was the lockout year. By year three, he was an all-star at age 22, averaged 17 points a game. All-star at age 23, averaging 22 a game. Then he has a terrible leg injury as part of Team USA. Basically loses a season, but then he's right back to being an all-star for two more years in Indiana before he goes to Oklahoma City and, of course, now is with the Clippers. But is he in Minnesota for at least 5 years? Does that keep Kevin Love in Minnesota? I think the answer to both of those questions are yes. There's also the development question, as there was with Steph Curry. Kurt Rambis is still the coach. He was the coach for one more season. But then he was fired, and the Wolves moved on to ultimately to Rick Adelman not all that long later. And so, you know, would Rick Adelman as a coach with Paul George and Ricky Rubio and Kevin Love had concocted a playoff team? And I think that's a resounding yes. And to me, that's actually the biggest what-if in Timberwolves history, because I think at that point you're halfway through the Kurt Rambis era and Paul George, I think, makes more of an immediate impact than Steph Curry would have in the offense the Timberwolves were trying to run at the time. I think that Paul George perseveres through the culture situation at that point, and the Wolves are at least a playoff contender faster, and they have the opportunity to keep all three of those guys, Love, George, and Rubio, versus Love leaving early and Rubio developing a little bit more slowly. But I think that to me is the biggest what if, certainly from that era in Timberwolves history. Okay, we're going to wrap up today by talking a little bit more about kind of the middle of the Con Edelman era. So that's next up. Before we get to that, I wanted to talk about Blinkist. Let me tell you about one of the ultimate life hacks. It's hard to find the time to sit down to read and learn more. When you don't have free time, you can't read or work on personal development. There's an incredible app that solves this problem, and I highly recommend it. It's called Blinkist. Blinkist is really unique, and it works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books, and condenses them down into just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. Successful people like business leaders are well known for reading a lot of books. Blinkist is made for busy people like you who want to get the main points of a book quickly so you can start using that information right away. And with its audio feature, Blinkist makes it easy to finish a book during your commute, on your lunch break, or while you exercise. 12 million people are using Blinkist right now, and it has a massive and growing library from self-help, business, health to history books. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestsellers lists, as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read but never had time to. I use Blinkist when driving in the car, while traveling, working out. Walks are the perfect time to use it if you take an early morning, late afternoon walk or evening walk. To listen to an entire book in 15 minutes is an unbelievable advantage over millions of people who are not yet using Blinkist but need to be. With Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books you want and all for one low price. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/NBA, try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/NBA to start your free 7-day trial. And you'll also save 25% off. But only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/NBA. The Rick Edelman era started with the 2011-2012 season. We talked a little bit about this a couple weeks ago in our last series here at Locked On Wolves. But Edelman takes over during the NBA lockout, and the lockout season starts that winter. Ultimately, it's just 66 games. The Wolves actually started that year decently well. They ultimately were 21-19 when Ricky Rubio tears his ACL against the LA Lakers, 21-19, headed into that game on Friday, March 9th. The Wolves are within a possession late against the Lakers. Rubio jumps out to play defense and Kobe Bryant tears his ACL. The Wolves fall to 21-20, and they only win 5 games the rest of the year. This is in early March, so this is basically they go like 5-20 to finish the season without Ricky Rubio. What if Rubio doesn't tear his ACL? At the moment, they were 8th in the Western Conference and had some winnable games upcoming, what should have been winnable games, the Hornets at the Suns, which they did actually win. They had, you know, at the Kings was coming up. The Wolves had some opportunities to win games late that season and were 100% in the playoff conversation. Rubio is finally looking completely comfortable, and the Wolves were relatively healthy at that point. If Rubio doesn't tear his ACL, do they make the playoffs that season instead of finishing 26-40? And even if they don't, they certainly finish in the neighborhood of 500, and there's a more positive feeling coming into the following season. And Rubio would have been healthy too. Remember, he didn't come back until somewhere around Christmas the following year and wasn't 100% for another basically 9 months after that for the rest of that season. What does that team look like if Rubio does not tear his ACL? Do the Wolves end that playoff drought earlier? And does that change the level of desperation? One playoff appearance in, you know, 9 years is different than none in 14 years, which is what it was when Tom Thibodeau was hired, or none in, I guess, 13 years when he was actually hired. Does that change the Wolves' level of desperation throughout the Edelman era? Do the Wolves then start the next year better? Does Kevin Love, you know, does something happen where Kevin Love doesn't find himself in a situation where he's breaking his knuckle the following offseason? And do the Wolves ultimately, become a contender much quicker, or at least a playoff contender, I should say? The following year, remember, Rubio starts the year with the torn ACL, so he only plays 57 games. Kevin Love has a broken knuckle in the fall doing knuckle pushups, allegedly, and ends up with 18 games played that year because he re-injured his knuckle in season. So Love plays 18 games. Rubio only plays 57. They had signed Andre Kirilenko, and Brandon Roy was also supposed to be the starting shooting guard, but only played 5 games before re-retiring. This team still won 31 games under Rick Edelman, which is somewhat shocking when you go back and look at it. The only guy on this team to play in in more than 80 games was Luke Ridnour. He started all 82 games for this team. Andrei Kirilenko played in 64, but that means he still missed 18 games. Alexei Shved ended up being the primary shooting guard at one point in the season. JJ Barea was a big bench piece. They signed Mikael Jelibol mid-season. Greg Steensma was the main backup center. This is such a weird team to still win 31 games. And imagine with a healthy Love, a healthy Ricky Rubio, at that point, you know, a mostly healthy Andrei Kirilenko, who had a good season when he was on the floor. Nikola Pekovic also missed 20 games, but was good when he was healthy. This is also probably a playoff team if Rubio doesn't tear his ACL. And then I guess the second part of this, which makes this an even bigger if, is if Kevin Love doesn't break his knuckle, we're very likely talking back-to-back playoff teams in 11-12, which that was a 26-win team in a shortened season, and the 31-win team in 12-13. You can't tell me this team doesn't improve by 10 to 12 games over a full season if you have an extra 60 games of Kevin Love and 30 games of Ricky Rubio. Just fascinating to think. And you feel bad for Rick Adelman because he was coming on board looking at this thinking, I've got Ricky Rubio's, you know, the in some way he's the modern age Jason Williams. He's the Kevin Love is my, not the same player, but some combination of Chris Webber and Vlade Divac from those Kings teams. Or, you know, he's looking at this as this is a two guys that are gonna grow together and this is gonna be a perennial playoff contender. Unfortunately, the Rubio injury happens, the Love injury happens. Those are the two main factors. But does this team then become a 7 or 8 seed? If not in 11 and 12 when Rubio gets hurt, but in 12-13 when Love was hurt and Rubio was recovering, if they become a 7 or 8 seed earlier, does Kevin Love ask for a trade the following offseason? Does Rick Adelman retire when he does if this team is going on its third playoff appearance or second playoff appearance in 3 years? Do either of those guys want to leave? And if that happens, the Wolves don't get the number one draft pick in 2014, which they then use to draft Karl-Anthony Towns. A fascinating kind of butterfly effect there if you kind of work forwards from that, starting with the Rubio ACL tear in March of 12. I contend that the Wolves would have made the playoffs in March of 2012. I also think, even with the Love injury, if Rubio had been healthy, I think they're a 500 team the following year. They probably still miss the playoffs, but they're not a 31-win team. They're probably a 40 to 43-win team and are close to making the playoffs, even with the Love injury. Without the Rubio ACL tear, I think that changes. The following season then, the 13-14 season was the year when they won 40 games, but their Pythagorean point differential suggests that they should have won 48. They had terrible luck. They were bad at closing games. Does that season even turn out differently? I mean, part of that is just bad luck. And if that luck's reversed, if you've had a healthy Rubio and Love playing together now for 2 years or a year and a half or so, does that season turn out differently? Do they win 44 or 45 games and sneak into the playoffs? And if that's the case and they've made the playoffs 2 out of 3 years, does Rick Adelman retire? Do the Wolves trade Kevin Love? What's that domino effect? I think it's absolutely fascinating and also maddening to think about. Now, we're not talking about an NBA Finals contender. We're talking about a team that probably at best would have been like a 5 seed or something like that. Maybe a little bit better if they had really, truly reached their ceiling together as a team. But I don't think this team has Karl-Anthony Towns now. I don't think Adelman retires as early. I don't think they trade Kevin Love as early. And maybe the team at this moment is in a worse spot, but they probably don't go through the whole Tom Thibodeau era in the same way. They probably would have made 5-6 playoffs with Rubio and Love as a tandem, adding in some of those other pieces. And I think we're just looking at a team that's kind of maybe stuck in NBA purgatory in a sense. But I think I speak for a good chunk of Timberwolves fans when I say that at times being in NBA purgatory of being the 6, 7, 8 seed would be a lot better than these starts and stops that we've had with near playoff teams and then tanking again, near playoff teams and then tanking again over really the past 15 years. And so I think, you know, a fun team coached by Rick Adelman with some fun players, some good shooting, you know, maybe they still end up with Kevin Martin and he's part of a playoff team and he was always a fun player to watch. Maybe this trajectory would have been very different had Rubio not torn his ACL in March of 12. And I tie most of it back to that injury. And Jerry Zagota felt the same way when we talked about this briefly last week on the podcast. So go back and listen to his take on that because he was obviously much closer to the team than I was at the time. And so I think that's just a fascinating thing to kind of unwind. All right, on our next episode of this week, we're going to kind of transition into the Tom Thibodeau years, which are clearly very fresh, but there were several decisions. Tom Thibodeau didn't make any roster decisions early in his tenure, and then suddenly made a bevy of roster moves. And so to kind of pick apart each of those moves and what may the Wolves have done differently? What if they had not done, you know, a certain trade, or what if they had taken a different trade package for a certain all-star? We'll talk through all those different possibilities here on our next episode later this week. All right, that's all I have for you today. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. That wraps up this edition of Locked On Wolves. A final special thanks to our friends at Built Bar for bringing us today's episode. Visit BuiltBar.com. Use promo code LOCKEDON to get $10 off your first order. Now, tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Hollinger and Duncan. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.